Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to be with you, everybody. We appreciate you so much being a part of the broadcast. It is July 14th. This is a special day. 23 years ago, my daughter, oldest daughter, was born to us. And a special thank you. You know, I saw Paul Mallow, who just joined, dialed in. Can't wait to listen to his wit and wisdom a little bit later on. But his daughter is also working with him on an intern basis. She published an article. It's almost so much fun to watch our kids grow up and step out on their own. And our happy birthday to Laura Renee Lickin. So anyway, also July 14th is the beginning of the Western Secondary Conference. So to all our friends out there at the secondary in San Francisco, as hot as it is here in Texas, says we'd love to be joining you there, but hopefully, and we got a fair number of people that told me, says, Dave, even though I'm here, I'm going to be listening, so we appreciate our faithful listeners. Again, this broadcast is created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, and we're the proud recipient of the Tony Garitano Innovation Award of 2013. Actually, it was Progress in Lending, but we just love Tony so much. So thank you so much, Tony, for that award. Special topic and discussion day. We've got a special guest, Jim Blanchard, a good friend, someone that I've known for many years that I'm grateful to have on the broadcast and really excited about this topic. His company is called Strategic Positioning. He'll be discussing a really, really important topic in these days, how to build a winning team. So you'll want to stay in touch all the way through till we get to the end of this, talking about how to do that. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors, United Guaranty. I tell you, I'm just so pleased with the folks there at United Guaranty, the whole team. I meet them all around the country when I'm flying there, and I really appreciate them. Lenders, and I really want to focus today on the certainty they bring, the flexibility they bring, and also the United Guaranty Master Policy. When it comes to when it becomes effect on October 1st, 2014, United Guarantee's new first lien mortgage insurance master policy will provide increased certainty and flexibility and transparency to lenders. United Guaranty's new master policy is the only one in the MI industry to include a master policy commitment letter specific to each lender that clearly defines each party's roles and responsibilities. The unique policy commitment letter clearly spells out the policies and practices governing underwriting claims and appeals. In a recent announcement, the United Guaranty's CEO, Donna DeMeo, said that lenders see the value of a master policy, and it goes beyond satisfying the minimum requirements to give a higher level of certainty and transparency that the policy commitment letter provides. So it's a great service. Be sure to check out what they are saying. Go to their website, www.ugcorp.com/master policy to read all about this, or get a hold of your local account executive. You'll enjoy them. They're a great group out there. Also, a special shout out and thank you goes to our other sponsor, Velma. Virch stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. I got to tell you, these folks, every week I see their talent. I keep coming up with ways to describe the broadcast, upcoming broadcast, as we get ready to do an email blast. And I tell you, they just have the way of wordsmithing. So not only are they a valuable service to get the word out, but they help you create your message in a compelling and sticky way. I want to say a big thank you to our friends at Velma for your partnership, and also really for the gifts. It's way, you guys provide something way beyond just a great email marketing. You actually get in and help us with content, and that is such a partnership. I just can't tell you, value so much, so much. All right, let's get right into it. Everyone's wondering what's going on with the markets so far, so let's take a look. I'm dialed in. It looks like they're trading off just a little bit, MBSs. So what's driving this?
Yeah, we're down.
Give us a report.
We're down about 5/32 on the day, well, from end of day on Friday, and no economic news came out today. It's just a reversal of some of what happened last week, which was, shift out of stocks and into bonds. We saw a nice improvement in prices last week, so today it's just a little bit of a reversal of that. The stock market Dow's up 120 points, so it's not bad that we're down a little because we're getting it on the other side.
Getting on the other end, yeah.
And last week we saw this in a bigger, to a greater extent, to the positive side for mortgage rates. We saw about a half a point improvement in prices on the Fannie Mae 30-year 3.5. That coupled with about 150 point drop in the Dow. But that came from concerns overseas. You know, a couple things going on. Everyone knows about the tensions in the Middle East with Israel and Hamas and Iraq and all that's going on.
Yeah,
there.
It's all it's just a seething pot over there.
That plus a little scare out of the largest bank in Portugal and what ramifications that could have for the Eurozone economy caused a bit of a shift to safer assets last week. And as I mentioned, you know, MBS prices improved and stocks declined. And then one of the other things that was good for mortgage rates last week came from the Fed. Even though the Fed meeting from June 18th didn't have any big surprises in their minutes, which came out on Wednesday, didn't have any major surprises. They did confirm that they were going to end the additional bond purchases in October. I imagine it will be their October meeting where they will no longer have bond purchases. And then they didn't change any guidance on the first Fed funds rate hike. But what they did talk about, which was kind of new and not a big deal, but enough to improve investors' outlook a little bit on MBS prices, had to do with what they are doing with their principal reductions. Their portfolio is full of loans that are paying off, agency debt that has principal reductions, and they have been reinvesting that in replacement MBS. And so once their taper occurs, once they're through adding new, their guidance now is that they're going to maintain their level of their portfolio, meaning for every dollar that pays off, they're going to reinvest dollars back into MBS. And they're going to do that, and that's sort of the announcement at this meeting, was that they're going to do that expecting it to continue at least until they begin to raise the Fed funds rate. And, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's $16 billion a month that the principal repayments have been averaging over the last few months. And so investors like that. I mean, that's added, you know, there's some demand associated with that. And so it's good for MBS prices and had a small impact on the MBS prices last week. The economic data last week, the JOLTS report was good. And surprisingly good, and had
surprisingly good,
negative effect on things. So that was good, and the new jobless claims, both of these were as good as they've been in, you know, since 2007. So this, before the start of the recession. But fortunately, neither of them had a big negative impact on MBS prices. Now this week's got a little more economic news on the calendar. Tomorrow, retail sales comes out. The consensus calls for there to be a pretty big improvement in retail sales. This is June retail sales, and the improvement would be over May. So it'd be interesting to see if that happens. And then PPI comes out on Wednesday. And there, too, the expectation calls for a larger increase. You know, last month we were surprised by negative readings on PPI. So it is a volatile measure, but the expectations now are that the PPI measures show a pretty significant improvement from those negatives, but still subdued over year over year. Housing starts comes out on Thursday. The market's expecting another over $1 million annualized, not $1 million, 1 million unit annualized new housing starts. Pretty closely consistent with prior weeks. And then the other data during the week, New York and Philly Fed manufacturing indexes come out, import prices, and consumer sentiment. So it's pretty busy week next week, so be good to pay attention.
Lots to pay attention to, and the best way to do that is through the MBS Quoteline service. Fabulous service, very affordable. That's the best part of it. It's affordable and short, sweet, to the point. Good job, Joe. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Excited
to have you participate in the Hot Topic segment. I'm very excited about this one. So, folks, we're going to be right back with Paul Mallow right after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteland delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back. And we have on the line Paul Mallow, the infamous Paul Mallow, full of wit and wisdom and all kinds of other stuff we can't get into on the broadcast. Good to have you here, Paul. I don't know, there's just something about you that's so harassable, but you are just, I just really do value your column here and your blog that you publish. It has just got some great information. So let's get into it. Some of the headlines. Sure. I know non-banks gaining some more GSE market share. Run through it for us.
Sure, I'll do my infamous best. I'm not sure infamous, by the way, is a compliment, David. That's usually what they use for murderers and stuff.
I used that one other time. I realized that that has such a difference. I mentioned your name. They go, I'm just so glad Paul's on there. And it's your personality, Paul. People just really resonate, and your personality comes through in the way you write. It's just so much fun. So, yeah, wit and wisdom, and, yeah.
Bernie Madoff was infamous.
So, that's true.
Anyway, we try and make things colorful and bring different insight to what's going on out there and bring our scoops with us. But anyway, we crunched a lot of data here. John Bancroft crunched the second quarter numbers. And, you know, it's interesting. Non-banks, I mean, remember non-banks, the guys that were going away the dodo bird during the housing boom? They accounted for 44% roughly of Fannie Freddie business in the second quarter. You know, a year ago, that was 28.8%. So what does that tell us? They're getting a bigger piece of the pie, but it's a declining pie, of course. But it shows us this evolution in the industry, which is going more towards non-banks, because basically the regulators have made it tough for banks to, hold MSRs, take your pick. It's interesting. I mean, a lot of banks are publicly traded, and they have to answer to shareholders. And costs are very important. And, you know, cost cutting has hurt the ability, in my opinion, of banks to be competitive in mortgages. I mean, we have exceptions, obviously. Wells Fargo came out with its second quarter origination numbers last week. It was up 31% first quarter to the second quarter. And today's IMF News, we have a story about City Mortgage. They grew their loan production by roughly 19%. So 19% compared to 31% for Wells. It's not as large, but, you know, they're growing. And we have more bank earnings are out this week. So some people are starting to wonder that maybe the second quarter was definitely better than most are thinking. There's a lot of things out there. There's also belief that non-banks might not be showing up in some of these application surveys. So we'll see. It's, you know, maybe, in other words, the bottom line is maybe things are a little better on the origination front than what we all thought. And I guess we'll see that through the summer as that plays out into the fall. A lot of talk about purchase money lending picking up. A lot of talk about non-banks getting into non-QM lending. We, we have a new advertiser on our website, Lakeview, which is part of Bayview. I mean, they're out there in the non-QM market. So it's very interesting, and we're seeing a lot of that. So we'll see what happens. We had the story that everyone else had, too. Citibank inking a $7 billion settlement on MBS. That's interesting to some degree. We all knew it was in the works. It's a big number.
Yep.
Looks like Citi can handle it. We have a New Jersey bank, lo and behold, thrown in the towel on mortgage retail mortgage lending. Sun Bancorp in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, is packing it in. So that's interesting. And they cite, tighter regulations and competition is one of the reasons. So we have a follow-up to the story that broke late last Friday, which we emailed out to our subscribers about the CFPB cracking down on mini correspondent transactions. This is basically where brokers get a warehouse line of credit and become bankers and fund in their own name. There's, you know, a lot of controversy on what CFPB is doing. They claim brokers are doing it so they don't have to disclose their compensation, get around these laws on disclosures. This, you know, this is interesting because if you're a broker and you get a warehouse line of credit, you're no longer a broker. You're a mortgage banker, and you're on the hook for that buyback. So, you know, is this overreach on the part of the CFPB, or are they just, you know, sort of putting a warning out there? It'll be interesting to see how far they go with this. Brokers, of course, are none too happy. And, you know, it's an interesting development, so that's out there.
We're going to be talking about that section.
Yeah, you guys might want to talk about that on your Hot Topic segment. And we have follow-ups to the CFPB, again, on the broker business and things along those lines. We got a little bit about the GSE bill that dropped last week. A lot of people say that bill introduced by a trio of House Democrats is actually a pretty interesting bill, very constructive, well thought out, but, of course, it's going nowhere. And that's all the highlights, so to speak. And we have a follow-up, too, on, a slight follow-up on the MI proposals. Those came out last week. The FHFA is, you know, introducing risk-based capital, risk-based this and that for the MIs. A lot of stuff about what they can count as capital and assets for their MI subs. They're taking comments through the fall. All the MIs will be commenting. So, you know, it's summer, and there's plenty to talk about in the mortgage industry, bottom line.
No short of it. It's good. Thank you, Paul, for being here. See, Sherry's also contributing to your daughter. Sherry's contributing again
yes,
to
thank you.
I love
Happy
seeing that.
To
I think
daughter.
It's great. Yeah, thank you, thank you. It's always so much fun to see the kids get involved and grow up and go out on their own. And anyway, Paul, appreciate it. Folks, you've got to get signed
you,
up for IMF News. I've told you that before. I'm serious about it. IMF News, www.imfnews.com. Sign up for it. It's valuable service. And, Paul, we appreciate you taking a moment to dial in each Monday. Appreciate you very much, man.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure. Alice, you heard him open the door on this topic that you were emailing us on earlier, and that, I mean, he being Paul, about what's going on with the lenders, I mean, the mini-core program, this mini-correspondent program. Fascinating, Alice. Big, big news here.
I agree, Dave. So hello, everyone. You know, this is big news because I don't know if anyone else is old enough to remember, but, you know, back when RESPA had its changes in the late 90s, when we first had to start putting back then the yield spread premium on a good faith estimate, it was a big debate back then on what constituted a bona fide secondary market transaction. You know, did, as a broker, I have to, or a mini core or even correspondent, did I have to keep it on a warehouse line for a number of days for it to be a bona fide transaction? We got into that debate back then. HUD was trying to say something like, well, maybe 5 days. And, you know, it ultimately boiled down to you can't enforce anything but what the rule says, what the law says, and what the definitions are. And you can't make it gray. So, you know, today we still kind of have always lived by that. Even with the changes through the new RESPA back in 2010, I still say that's new because people still make mistakes. I mean, what they did happen yesterday at some jobs, but they go, really? I have to do that? Okay, so, all right, back to the topic. But this new guidance, it's only 14 pages, but it packs a wallop for companies. For those of you who haven't had a chance to read it, it does say that now there's about a list of 20 questions that you have to run through to say, is this a bona fide secondary market transaction when a broker is considering themselves a mini correspondent? So in that series of 20 questions, then if I get to the bottom of, I am not trying to circumvent the regulation, then as a broker I'd be fine with how is my compensation structured and what am I showing on a GFE. There's major RESPA and Truth in Lending caveats to this. So I really boil it down to you have to pass a reliance test. How reliant are you as a broker on your correspondent or your warehouse line funder to do everything? As a second note, I think there's huge risks for the lender too. You know, Paul brought up, you know, the brokers aren't happy. If I'm a company who's a wholesaler and I've tried to all this time try and move people into a mini correspondent to reduce my risk, well, guess what? This changes that game. I now have to assess all my relationships and determine if I kind of pass this test of 20 questions. So I wanted to open it up for discussion because they add this component of what is the real interest of the funding lender. So there's clear points they're trying to make to the broker and to the lender at the same time. This is not just a one-sided issue. So I know Andy and Joe, I'd love to have your feedback on this too, Dave.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start off by just saying my concern is a knee-jerk reaction where you see people going, you know what, just more reason to, you know, to pull back. So my first response is, wow, could this be having an impact on liquidity for them and that whole segment of the industry? When I've seen a tendency to go towards brokers again because of they're still the low-cost origination arm of our industry, and this just really puts them at a decided disadvantage. But, you know, Andy, Joe, Joe, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I wonder to what extent the CFPB is going to say that violations of this, let's say they do assess the 20 questions and come up with answers and say, hey, you really are still a broker, what's that going to do to their past practices? And more importantly, what might that do to the relationship with, you know, the loans in the pipeline right now with their investor, you know, if they're the mini correspondent, are those investors going to back away from those loans? Do you know if those loans are going to be compliant as closed under the mini correspondent process, or will they, in retrospect, be reviewed as though they were brokered loans and they don't disclose broker compensation?
That's a huge point, Joe, because this is just policy guidance. There's no effective date, you know, so there's no, this isn't a proposed or a final rule. This is, so when an agency issues guidance, that's clarification of what they believe is existing today.
Interesting.
So those loans being closed by the mini correspondents, if they don't pass the test, are deficient loans?
Well, I guess you would, you know, have to, at that point, now I start thinking I need to call a lawyer, right? Because
yeah.
This came out today, you know, if I'm running operations, I'm going, what do I do today? I'm calling a lawyer, right? I need somebody who can tell me, do I have a defense for applications taken as of today versus applications taken last week? If I pulled loans in into a mini correspondent relationship, I know I have dedicated lines. I know I'm perhaps offering more support than would be typical for a true correspondent. You know, do I have to change my business model today?
Well, I think, Andy, I want to get your two cents on this real fast, and then we've got to keep moving along here because this is a whole new topic. Big
Well, I think Alice really nailed it when she was first summarizing part of the comments from the CFPB, and that is, are you engaging in an activity with the intent to circumvent the regulations or the rules or the guidelines? Specifically, we know that gain on sale is a non-disclosable item. We know that fees paid are a disclosable item. We know that if you convert a broker transaction to a correspondent transaction, the gain on sale component suddenly can get paid over to the broker that would have been otherwise non-disclosed. If you're doing that simply because you want to hide the fees paid to the broker because you want to convert disclosable fees into non-disclosable fees as the gain on sale, if that's the point of doing this, then I think it's wrong and I think you got a problem. If you legitimately are a correspondent, you legitimately have warehouse lines, you legitimately have investor relationships, you really are a mortgage bank, not a broker, then you're fine. But you have to look at I think what they're saying here and what Alice summarized so well, you got to look at the intent. If your intent is to circumvent the rules, then you got a problem. If you're legitimately a correspondent, then you're fine. And, you know, it will make it that simple, but that's how I see it at this point.
Well, I think Alice said it so well. It's time to pick up the phone and call an attorney. And, of course, I was on the phone with I was talking to Mitch Kider on Friday, and we were talking about bringing him back in, him lined up to be on the broadcast here, I think at the end of the month. And this hopefully will bake out a little bit more, and we'll have a little more clarity on this and more commentary will be coming out. So we're going to cover this in great detail, and most likely this will be the hot topic for Mitch. But, Alice, very, very, very interesting. It's a big, huge topic that has huge ramifications to an industry already reeling from other ramifications of other publications about this. So keep bringing this to us. Appreciate it so much.
You're welcome. We'll be putting together a write-up on it, on the way we see it from a day-to-day business practice and some things people should be considering. So we'll follow up with everyone on that. Send us an email if you'd like to get a copy.
Yep. Alice Alvey, you can reach her
at indicom.net.
Alice.Alvey, A-L-V-E-Y, at indicom, E-I-N-D-E-C-O-M-M-M.net. Get a hold of her. Thank you. Or head out to the website, mortgageu.com, but mortgage-u.com.
Dash you.
Got to get that dash in there. Yeah. Like they say, it's what happens in the dash that makes all the difference in your life. So anyway, folks, good to have you with us, Alice, and I'm looking forward to having you participate in the Hot Topic segment here just a bit. We've got Tony Garitano, the Profit Doctor, and Sam Garcia coming up. A lot of them line up. Be sure to come stay tuned, as we'll be right back after this brief word.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
I like that, Alice. Your Andy did a great job on that ad. I like your new spot getting in now that you've been acquired. You finally got that loaded up. Sounded great. Let's get into Tony Garitano's on the line here. We missed you, Tony. You haven't been on the broadcast. I know you've been busy doing some things with some of family and then some of it just business. You're a busy guy, but I want to get into there's so many questions about what's going on in the LOS world right now, and I've got a couple questions for you. And so are you ready?
I am ready. Go ahead.
What does an LOS have to do to succeed these days? I look at the challenges they're facing, and how the heck can they stay on top of all this? So what's the keys to success?
You know, it's
Tony?
Certainly interesting. I think, you know, that there's a lot of competition in that space. There always has been, and I think it's just even more so these days. But I think I wanted to kind of answer the question in terms of the recent acquisition of LendingQB.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, that's kind of an interesting story where the owners sold it to LPS. LPS became Black Knight Financial Services, and Black Knight Financial Services sold it back to the original owners. So now Lionel Urban, you know, who started PC Lender, is now in charge of PC Lender after he sold it and bought it back. But what's interesting about why he bought it back, in the announcement that he made to us in the media, he said that he bought it back to offer an LOS that has an increased focus on workflow and configurability that can be deployed within 30 days. So,
wow.
What's going to happen is he's going to work on this on the LOS. He's going to continue to enhance it. He knows the system, obviously, backwards and forward. But, you know, the LOS of the future, the one that's going, the ones that are going to succeed, have to be deployed or have to be able to be deployed faster. And they also have to have certain key differentiators. You know, it can't be, you know, one LOS looks like the next LOS. If an LOS is going to stand out, they have to do something different than the competition.
There's no question that is, and it's just a fascinating story. It's a love America when you sell the same horse twice, or at least, you know, sell it and then buy it back and even make money doing so. So do you have some examples of LOS companies that are doing some new things in order to differentiate themselves? I got a blog post about how it is important going out today and this week on being different. Differentiating yourself.
Yeah, I spoke with Fiserv last week, and they, as you know, they've launched the Common Origination Platform for some time now. And I think that the differentiator there is that you can originate all types of loans, whether they be commercial, residential, home equity, auto, you know, all on the same platform. So you don't have to have multiple systems for your different lending channels. So I think that's a differentiator for them.
Open Close just came out with an announcement this morning about how they're using secondary marketing and analytics in their LOS to help lenders get greater visibility from a secondary marketing standpoint. So I think, you know, what you're seeing akin to the Lending QB announcement that we talked about earlier is these loan origination systems are not just, you know, using the same old catchphrases like, you know, end-to-end, all-in-one, software as a service.
Right.
You know, they're trying to carve out differentiators for themselves. And I think that the good thing that I'm seeing in the announcements is that they're putting their differentiators in business terms, which is always good for lenders because they don't want to hear, you know, MISMO version, blah, 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 you know, loosely coupled systems, XML, DTD versus schema. You know, lenders want to know, you know, what's the business value of this particular technology for me? So I think the more LOS companies can enhance their systems in new and creative ways, and the more they can articulate those enhancements in business terms, you know, the better they're going to be and the more value they're going to be able to add.
Yeah, that's very good. Very, very interesting. Good commentary to how to differentiate yourself. And like Lionel's talking about, you know, how to deploy something much quicker than anyone else. That's a big issue for so many out there. So I think that's good feedback, Tony. Thank you so much. We just don't stay so scarce. There's so much going on in the world of LOS, rumors about acquisitions and all these things going on. It's just really, really valuable. Thank you.
Appreciate Thank it. You for having me, Dave.
Always a pleasure. Profit Doctor, let's get into your wisdom and wit. I love that as well. It's so much fun to hear what's going on out there. And, you know, you sit and look at the technology world, and there's just so many things. And I love this idea of differentiating. Tony brought up a great point. How to differentiate yourself is such a big deal. So what's your thoughts today?
Well, a couple things, Dave. Well, first off is on a reference back to what Tony said. First off, if Lionel's going to put his mind to something, I certainly would expect there to be a favorable outcome. So the PC Lender story is yet to be told. And I can tell you, if he really can come up with a system that's deployed in 30 days, that is going to be a huge differentiator. And quick reference point, you know, our firm is all Apple. We run Macs. You get a Mac, you take it out of the box, you turn it on, it works.
It works.
Plug in a printer, it works. You plug in a Wi-Fi device, it works. You turn it on, it works. You buy a PC, get it out of the box, turn it on, you got to install drivers. Then you got to reconfigure this other thing. And you got to get an updated driver for the printer because the other printer doesn't work. And then you try to get your Wi-Fi to work, it doesn't work. And then it's just a disaster. And that's what LOSs are like. LOSs are trying to install a PC. And if someone really can come up with an Apple Mac version of an LOS where it really is, plug and play, you open it up, you turn it on, it works, you plug it in, it works, you hook up a wireless device, it works. If they can really pull that off, I think that's going to be significant, very, very significant. So first point. Now the second point. You know, we were talking today about communication, and we're talking about people's personality, and it really comes down to be how you say what you say is actually more important than what you say. It's not just the message; it's the delivery method. And, you know, we have customers talking to originators, and all the customer wants to know is, "Am I approved?" And the originator says, "Oh, we've scheduled your closing date," but didn't really answer the question. And how you communicate with customers? Some people want the facts. Some people want to feel good about it. And I'm going to give a financial reference to this point about communicating with different styles and appreciating the differences. So I'm going to mention one thing about the Platinum Rule and then the financial example, and then I'm done. In appreciating differences, everybody knows the Golden Rule. Do unto others as you want to be done unto. And I think that the Platinum Rule is actually a better rule. And you've heard me talk about this over the years. It's do unto others as they want to be done unto. Speak to others in the way they want to be spoken to, you know, I don't like champagne, so don't buy me a bottle of champagne as a present. I like sweet, syrupy wine. So you may not like that, but that's what I like. Get me what I want, not what you want. In the same way, when you're communicating to people, you communicate in the way they can hear, not the way you want to speak. And
yes.
So on the financial side of this, Dave, and I know you know all this stuff. I was hired come in as a consultant years ago with an Eskimo company. Actually, I was helping turn around an Eskimo company. I came in as CPA to help them fix stuff. And I was talking to the previous financial person, and they go, well, I go up there and I talk to them and I show them their income statement and the KPIs, and look, their expense ratio is 1.5 to 1 and it's way out of whack. And I go, okay, well, hang on a second, give me the data. And so I took their financial data and I created this chart that showed a sloping line that was heading from like 1,000 to zero, and it was how much money in thousands the company had. And over about 12-month period, it goes from you're here, and it's going to slope down and out and down to zero. And so I showed them that chart, and I said, "This is what your company looks like. You're going to be out of business in 18 months, and you're going to be out of money in 12 months." And they're going, "Oh my gosh! Why did anybody tell us this?" Well,
so amazing.
You know,
that's a great story.
They had been telling them it, just not in the way they could hear it. So that's the point.
Yes.
You got to talk to people. You got to present financial information in a way that people can hear what it is you're talking about. And most of the time, CPAEs is the wrong way to communicate.
Well, that's why I love about the Profit Doctor. You stay away from the CPAEs. I don't like the IEs. You say it in a way that I can get it and understand it. It's good. That's good. Good. That's so good. It's so important. And then a lot of it is asking the question. It reminds you of the cartoon of the guy that the lady is trying on a new dress, and she says, "Do I look fat in this dress?" And he goes, "Do I look stupid?" So I think there's this thing that you really get into this really. It's how to ask the right question, how to communicate. So there's a lot of good stuff there. Thank you so much, Prophet Doctor. I can't wait to get you in on the Hot Topic segment, as we're going to go to that right after Sam Garcia. Thank you so much, Prophet Doctor.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Sam Garcia, it's always fun to have you on. Again, I'm a fan of you for so many reasons. I just like you so much as a person. But really, the thing that just gets me even more excited is the data that you have. So give us a quick update, Sam.
Well, you know, thanks for having me on. And today we got a report from Hope Now. And what's interesting about it is that we've seen that the modifications as they're tracking on a monthly basis have fallen to the lowest level really since they started tracking this stuff in 2009. And what's interesting about that is that it's coming at a time when delinquency, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, fell to the lowest level since 2007, and that the home equity, as far as the U.S. average loan to value, is down to a multi-year low. So we're seeing times turn around, and, you know, I think the fewer modifications are a good sign that the distress level is quite a bit down. And, another thing that came out recently was that we saw home equity loan delinquency increase. So the American Bankers Association reported that it went up 9 basis points from the fourth quarter to the first quarter. So, you know, something to keep your eye on. But I know how you always like to talk about our statistics and what you say. So, you know, I'm looking back here, and I see that one of the most interesting sections of our mortgage statistics is our mortgage origination statistics. This particular section of the page or of the section has 60 lines of different metrics. Some of them are going back as far as 1990. And, you know, among these metrics that we're maintaining on there are historical and forecasted annual originations from Fannie, Freddie, and MBA. And we also report purchase and refinance originations. Other origination data on this page includes government mortgage production and home equity conversion mortgage production, and also lending by banks and lending by credit unions. So, you know, those kinds of totals. And for your audience that's interested in getting a hold of this data, basically you just go to our website, and on the left side you'll see a link to mortgage statistics. And when you get to that page, you can click the origination statistics link, and you'll just find this massive trove of information about mortgage origination. And like I said, some of it going back to the 90s.
It's truly valuable, Sam. I just love the stuff, the data you have. I mean, and your passion for it. It's so obvious that you really are in there. And this is this. Yeah, you know, I think you'd almost do this if you weren't paid for it. You know, so it's a good service, valuable stuff. Thank you so much. The thing that I value that really opened my eyes up: the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that there was 275,000 people who were towards 278,000, and you said, no, well, that's their tracking. This is why they track that, and here's how they get to that number. But here's the real number. And you shared that with us. It was 700, almost 700,000 or something like that. I mean, those are valuable. You folks, you've got to have multiple points of view and multiple inputs to get the whole story of what's going on. Sam's service at www.mortgagedaily.com. Valuable service. I'm logged into it right now. Great stuff. Thank you, Sam, for being with us. Folks,
thank you,
we're going to be right back with Jim Blanchard right after this brief break. Thank you.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, everybody. I've been excited about this broadcast for a while. I'm excited about Dave. They said you're excited about all the broadcasts. Yeah, that's true. I am. But I'm very excited about this one because I have a friend on here, Jim Blanchard, who is the president, and along with his wife, of Strategic Positioning. They're based here in Austin, Texas. They really do a lot for companies in getting the right people on the bus, getting the wrong people off the bus, or the right people off the bus, and building the right teams. And I think at this time, in this age, or this season we're in as an industry, it's so critical that you understand how to get the right people on into your company, and then also show the right people to the door. I mean, you hate to let go of people, but, you know, it's a reality. It's the ebbs and flows that we're in. And we've got Jim Blanchard. Jim, good to have you on the broadcast. I could rattle on about this forever, but I just really want to get into this because it's really great to have you here. By the way, I should mention that you use the Berkman method, the tool, which was really exciting, and you're a facilitator for this. And I've now brought you in. I'm hoping to bring you on a regular basis into my client's base and into our own company, and I encourage anyone listening, bring Jim in to do a Berkman assessment. A Berkman assessment really gets in and assesses who your team is. And here's the reason I like the Berkman assessment so much. Number one, it's important that, like Myers-Briggs, they tell you where you are where you're at on a static basis, where your life is. Other tests kind of test somewhere where you go under stress, but the best test I have found to most accurately measure where I go under stress and is the Berkman method, the Berkman assessment. And, you know, I don't know about you, but there's a little bit, you're a shop, folks, but there's a little stress in our industry. And so when we have the opportunity to figure that out, it's really good. Jim, good to have you with us. What is the value to our listeners of using the personality assessment tool such as a Berkman to enhance communication? Andy was talking earlier about it's so important that we talk to people in the way they need to be spoken to so they get it. How can we help? How do you help them?
Well, what Andy said is actually true. Everyone listening knows that the constructive relationships and teamwork is all based on trust and effective communications. And if they are more effective in the way they communicate and work as a team, it's going to make them money, save them time, save them money. It's going to reduce risk, and it's also going to make them feel good.
Yeah, that's the heart. Well, if we could speak to people the way they want to, and Andy is gifted at that, and the Berkman can help them do that in which way? Let's get into a little more specific there.
Okay. We use the Berkman to assist organizations to develop behavioral health. That's kind of like your operational effectiveness assessment. You go and look all through companies as far as the technical stuff. We basically look at all of the behavioral areas and try to help people figure out how to close those gaps, and that's how the Berkman is used.
Well, hey, Jim, thanks for being on the call. It's Andy. It's nice to hear your voice. It's great meeting you in person last week and the week before. So you know, you've been talking about the assessment tool, the Berkman assessment tool.
Right.
And it's still, how do you get, I mean, I've seen you describe with amazing accuracy behavior and how to speak to someone, but how does it do that? How does it know?
How the instrument knows, I'm not entirely sure. It just does. It's been around for 60-some years. It measures four things. First thing it measures is what appeals to you most in your life. We call those interests. And they are the things, the activities that give you pleasure and keep you going, kind of what motivates you. Second thing we measure is your usual behavior. And, Dave, you mentioned some of the other instruments. That's about all they measure. It's how you operate in the world. And those are our strengths and what we do when we're productive. But they call that usual because it's how you show up and present yourself daily. Then the thing that is unique about the Berkman is it measures what are called needs. And that's the environment you want to be in or how you expect other people to treat you. When they don't treat you that way, we measure something called stress, which is a reaction to not getting your need met. So if your need is met, your usual behavior, which is the productive good self, shows up. If your need isn't met, the stress shows up. And, Andy, what you talked about earlier is if I speak to you in a way that pushes you, that doesn't meet your needs, your stress shows up and we stop having a conversation.
Yes, yes. I just assume you don't know what you're talking about and I move on. As bad as that sounds. So okay, well, now, but to putting on my CFO hat for a second, and you know, we're in business to help fulfill the American dream by helping people buy a home, but also we have to make money. So how does having this service, this tool, this assessment process, you know, what's the ROI? How do we make money? How do we save money or save time or reduce risk or feel good about it? I mean, how does this, tell me about the reality from a financial perspective.
Well, it's been interesting listening to all of y'all because you're basically teeing up what we do. Starting with making money, your product is relatively commoditized. I mean, and those timely service, connection with the buyer, that's going to be your key to making money. And if my style is abrasive to somebody else's style, if I'm not speaking your language, then it's going to be harder for me to originate an opportunity with you, so I'm not going to make as much money. The Berkman acts, Andy, like that slope chart you were talking about. It creates a way that people become aware of how they're interacting with other people and modify it so that they can do things quicker, do things in a more friendly manner, therefore make more money.
Well, certainly having an originator being more effective in communicating with realtors, builders, customers, whatever, is going to make us more money. So do you have more examples of how this would work?
Yep. Well, let me give you a specific example. Something we measure is how we communicate one-on-one with people who are important to us. Now, my usual behavior, how I present myself, is to be very straightforward and matter-of-fact. And if I'm talking to somebody who has a need to feel highly respected and have people communicate with her in a tactful manner, then I might say something in an abrupt way which she would take as criticism. That's going to cause her to react. Remember, a stress behavior. And the stress behavior is to defend her position or withdraw from the conversation. So knowing that, I've become more careful in the way I approach any subject which could be considered negative or critical beyond what I would normally do. It's not my intent to offend somebody, but the way I say something sometimes impacts very different than the intent.
So that obviously starts to save time, right? I mean, if you can be better at communicating, people can get along better in your workforce. But so can you give us a couple more examples?
Sure. Something else we measure is something called structure. It has to do with how a person handles systems and procedures. So if an originator, I use myself as an example, but Dave, I could use you because you live in the same world. If I have low structure, so I'm very flexible, spontaneous, and I don't care much about working with detail. Now, that would cause huge stress to a processor, so because I send over stuff to them that's about three-quarters or half-finished, and then, of course, want the response immediately, they're going to be in trouble. So if they're working with a high structure, we measure high and low, so high structure likes detail, likes to work to a written, organized plan. So if I'm putting pressure on them where they like defined rules, systems, procedures, time to do the job right, time to finish one thing before they start another, If I know that the processor needs that as the originator, I'm going to save time by meeting some of his needs. That's going to save him time. That's going to save me time. And it's going to allow me to get back to my client quicker. Now, I know that about myself, so I am in the position where I can choose to be more complete and more detailed. I meet the processor's needs and save time. Then you toss the underwriter in the mix, and you've really got it confusing.
So how does the use of a personal style tool reduce the risk?
Okay, well, with all of the changes in technology on a regular basis, we no longer take the time to get to know our colleagues, our stakeholders. We don't do apprenticing and mentoring anymore. We need to have tools to allow us to shorten the time to efficiency for new hires or people put in new jobs. Everyone knows the most important we have in our assets, in our business, the people, but we need the right people on the bus, what Dave's been saying. And once we get them on the bus, we often expect them to become more productive and add value by teaching them the technology and not teaching them how to communicate effectively.
Wow.
The environment and the culture, you know, communication is hard. You got to learn how to do that. So everybody calls communication behavioral training soft skills, and when we focus our efforts on technology, but we forget how to be more effective communicating. So what the Burkman allows you to do, communicate more effectively, and that's going to be probably more important than learning the technology, but also creating a way you communicate effectively internally is going to reduce the time and reduce the risk of doing something wrong.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I've heard the word stress a lot of times, and it gets me kind of stressed out. So, tell me, you know, how does knowing your behavior add value?
Well, stress is not your evil twin; it's a reaction to have your needs not being met. So, if I use the Burkman to assess needs, which are usually hidden, I mean, we don't always know what they are, and to identify stress behavior, it puts you at choice instead of reaction. So that reduces the risk of your becoming non-productive or offending your colleagues. For example, we measure something called thought. Now, thought measures the amount of time necessary to make a decision on day-to-day or important decisions. Dave and I have very different thought scores, for example. I happen to have his Burkman in front of me. My stress behavior is to be impulsive, hasty, and change decisions. People with Dave's scores want me to spend a little bit more time, look a little broader, have a little better idea of where we're going. So what can happen is if I make a decision too quickly, Dave's likely to be a little go into stress, and the stress is to worry about the decision, step back a little bit, say, wait a minute, we can't do it that fast, and that's going to create angst between us. He's going to think that I'm hip shooter. I'm going to think he's not willing to make a decision ever, and both of those are wrong. What the experience has to do with having language to say, Dave, I know you need a little more time to think about this. You know I want to make it quickly. Can we come up with a time to make the decision? I mean, Dave knows this, and that's why he sent me some notes and says, what are we going to talk about ahead of time? So he could look at them, and I could look at them. I probably didn't need them. He probably did.
So, Jim, I could see this being very helpful if you had the time to prepare for the individual you're going to be meeting with.
Uh-huh.
And that's true in some places, but in our business, we're interacting with lots of people all the time, and you really can't sit there and look at the processor and say, well, she has this stress level, and the loan officer assistant has this stress, and talk to them differently and be very efficient at it. So, give us an example of how you modify your behavior in order to meet someone else's needs.
That's a really good point, Joe, and I appreciate your bringing it up. That the trick is to create a habit and to understand your own style. If I understand my own style, let me give you an example. My own behavior is that of a talker-persuader. I go 90 miles an hour. And other people may have a very different need. They may want to be in an environment where it's strategic and thoughtful. Okay. Knowing that, if I get a response back, like, well, just give me a little time to think about that, then I know that person wants a different style than mine. So I would, for example, I've been using Dave as the example. He has a need that's very different than my usual behavior. He needs people to be thoughtful, considered, speak more slowly, use fewer words. And so when I'm working with him, I make a conscious decision that I'm going to modify my behavior. Once I've learned the information, I know what the behavior is, I try to come to center so that I may not get all the way to his behavior, but I'm a long way from mine. That's how you go about doing it. And that's why, you know, that's why, Dave, you guys have all these people on, because you're meeting lots of different needs from your listeners who may be listening from different points of view. All of your stuff is presented from the middle.
Interesting.
Yeah,
fascinating stuff.
I know that this has been helpful in organizations I've been in the past, and I just wanted to ask sort of what areas do you emphasize is where this kind of tool can be most useful, Jim?
Thank you. The self-awareness from Berkman reports helps a person identify needs, control their stress, add to their enjoyment every part of their lives. It can provide the same kind of insight that you know, going inside and doing the effectiveness surveys can do for an interpersonal part of the business. The Berkman method is used as a tool for supporting hiring, supporting assimilating new people into teams, developing leadership teams, creating cohesive virtual teams like the processor and the originator and the underwriter kind of thing, coaching behaviors, resolving conflicts, and determining if you have to resize an organization, how to keep a diverse resource, but also how to differentiate between your exemplars and your not-so-exemplars. And it also has the ability to help in the hiring space with career choices, but also help people that maybe aren't going to stay in their career choices as they go looking for something different.
You know, looking at the clock, we only have 2 minutes before we have to wrap this up. I remember there were 11 areas of my style that were identified and merit measured. Could you cover for our audience real quickly what those 11 areas are, basically?
Sure. First one is sensitivity related to individuals. It's are we more issue or person-oriented? Secondly,
right.
How we relate to people in groups. Are we more comfortable alone or in a group setting or a combination of that? How we deal with systems and procedures. That's the one called structure. Do we exhibit structure or do we exhibit flexibility? How do we deal with directing and controlling? Do we suggest or do we tell? How do we prefer to be incentivized? Is there a we focus or an I focus? What's our preferred pace for action? Do we express our energy physically or mentally? Do we run around like a bunny, or are we sitting and thinking about things? How do we measure our own success? How do we express or deal with emotions? Are we logical and practical, or do we express our feelings outwardly? How do we deal or handle interruptions? Are we focused, or do we need variety? How unconventional are we in our outlook? Are we conventional, or are we independent? And then how much time and information do we need to make decisions? So those are the 11 things, and we look at the usual behavior.
That's so powerful.
The need and the stress and all of those.
Yeah, this is just such a valuable thing, and I keep looking at what our usual behavior is and what our needs and stress behaviors are. And it's just so valuable. How can people get a hold of you? I want to make sure I'm looking at the time. We're wrapped up, need to wrap this one up. But how can people reach you if they're interested in learning more? You have a website, I believe it's called strategicpositioninc.com. Inc. Is that correct?
It's strategicpositioninc.com, INC at the end.
Yeah. INC, yeah, it's incorporated.
VisionPositioningInc.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn and all the stuff is there. Or have them just catch up with you, because you can catch up with me.
Yes, I will chase them down. I love to introduce you, listeners, to Jim and his company, especially as you're looking at building, expanding, or in some cases, contracting. It's do it in an intelligent, organized way. This man, I tell you, he'll tell things about you that will just blow you away. I sat in a meeting and listened to him read just this assessment to one of our clients, and she was blown away. She says, the whole company needs this. So it's very valuable. Jim, thanks so much for taking time out of your week to join us. So good to have
you
here.
Thank you for inviting me.
And it's great. Jim Blanchard of Strategic Positioning. It's good to have him here with us. Folks, I want to say a special thank you to United Guarantee, also to Velma. Next week, we have Marcia Davies will be here. She is the Chief of Staff for the MBA, and I'm always fascinated with the partnership that she has with David Stevens, how that works. We're going to be learning about some of those principles, how we can incorporate those principles of what's working so well there at the MBA, watching these two, an iconic figure like David Stevens, and a make-it-happen person
like Marcia Davies. You're going to want to not miss next week's broadcast. Also want to call attention to the NBA's Risk Management and Quality Assurance Forum that will be in September 7th and 9th. I'll be talking more about that in future broadcasts. Folks, good to have you with us. Hope you have a great rest of the week. Be sure to tune in next week as we have Marcia Davies with the NBA talking about partnering and managing an effective organization in a dynamic world. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elby, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.